Hello, everyone. As you'll know, if you've listened to the start of every podcast, my husband has Parkinson's. Therefore, I'm always referred to as his carer. This is a description I absolutely hate, and I'm not the only one who doesn't like this title. I know many of you listen to the podcast Movers and Shakers. An episode or two ago, they read out an email they'd received from a listener, and I loved what that listener wrote. I refer to myself as not a carer, but as a PA, a Parkinson's assistant. Personally, I like this title so much better. I started out my professional life as a personal assistant, and I have certainly always been Howard's personal assistant. So to change it slightly to Parkinson's assistant is okay by me. If you have other suggestions, I would be delighted to hear from you and to share them with our listeners. In this episode, I spoke to two such PAs. They both kindly agreed to open their hearts to me about what and how caring for their partners affect their everyday lives.
I learned that I had to now push her to do all the things that she liked to do and have my own interests and have my own challenges in life and also to look after myself.
I don't have really my own life anymore. I have snippets and I have sleep because Nick does the nights. But in the day, I don't really have the life that she had.
My first PA is Nigel Craig. In 2005, he semi-retired from an electronics company he had founded earlier in his career. And together with his wife, Marie-France, they decided to travel and look at other places to live, either fully or partially, later in life. South Africa was one country they fell in love with and started spending time there. This was where Marie-France was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2016. Nigel's passion, from knee-high to a grasshopper, has always been flying and obtaining his multi-engine instrument-rated licenses, which allowed them to fly themselves over most parts of the world. As Marie-France's Parkinson's progressed, those plans became impractical. And in 2020, Nigel and Marie-France returned to the UK. And as Nigel told me, flying and travel became curtailed and now much reduced. This is how our conversation went.
Marie-France, my wife, she has Parkinson's and I'm the one that cares for her.
How did you find out about Marie-France's diagnosis? Where were you?
It was in 2016 and we were living in South Africa. And Marie-France was suffering with some back pain, which was seemed to be getting worse and worse. And she had a fall, and we went to the doctor, and the doctor sort of ummed and ahed and looked and said this, that, and that. And then I said, well, I think maybe I'll make an appointment for you to go and see a neurologist. And he said, okay, will that help? And yeah. So we toodled off to a neurologist that had been recommended and into his office. And then within a very short space of time, he just quite matter of fact said across the desk, you, to Marie-France, you have Parkinson's. But I think probably that is how it is done with most people. I don't know. I mean, where do you start and how do you say to somebody they have a problem, either sound dramatic. The symptoms at that time were very, very minor. And we didn't really have any understanding of Parkinson's. It had never cropped up before in our life. So it was a bit of a, what do you do now situation.
And what did you do? Did you get help from this neurologist?
Yes and no. A very nice guy. His father had Parkinson's. He did seem to understand what Parkinson's was all about. But it was more a question of, and I think this is probably from listening to the other working groups within the Parkinson's community, that There is an initial void when they're discovered that they have Parkinson's and they don't know where to turn. So I think we probably did what most other people do and just go on the internet and type in Parkinson's and then trawl through all the things that come up. Some are helpful and some are totally spurious. And we didn't really have any help, I think, for the first 6 years during which MUFONS started with the diagnosis.
That's interesting. And how come you have got more help in recent months?
Well, we came back to the UK. We got on the last flight out of South Africa and came back to the UK with no intention of staying. But then lockdown came and we were locked down here. And at that time, Ruth France's condition really did start to begin to trouble her. Mm. And we had a great difficulty in finding a neurologist. And we managed during lockdown to find a neurologist in London privately to go and see, because the NHS was completely, you couldn't even see your doctor, as everybody knows, and it was just a nightmare. And that was our first experience of private neurologists. And it was a question of who we could see, not that was available, not who we could see that we wanted to see. And he very much produced the mantra of, well, yes, you've got Parkinson's. Here's a prescription for the tablets. Keep taking the tablets and come and see me next month, because I've got a lovely chateau in the south of France, which I need to fund. and recommended physiotherapists, who were very nice physiotherapists, yeah. But they were sports physiotherapists.
Oh.
And they really had no understanding, I don't think, of the combination of scoliosis together with now developing Parkinson's. So it was all a bit of a disaster during the sort of the couple of years of COVID.
Mm.
And then post-COVID, and in the last year or so, I started to make more inquiries, because now it was becoming evident that we needed some assistance. And eventually I badgered our local Parkinson's clinic, which is at Lisson Grove, with Dr. Roche, and pestered his secretary no end until we managed to get an appointment. And then from there, everything changed. He was very helpful, very kind. He put us in touch with other agencies. Other agencies then took an interest. And so it all started to progress through the system. Which was a big relief.
Yeah, that's very interesting that you use the word you pestered, because I did exactly the same. And I have said at carers meetings, you know, don't take no for an answer, because you've just got to keep bashing on the door until they get bored with you and think, well, I must give this person an answer. Otherwise, they're never going to go away. And you think, yep, that's exactly what I want. I want an answer.
And the problem also was the doctor. You couldn't see the doctor, and I think they're quite overworked. And our local GP has never even seen Mary France.
Oh my!
And in the early days of the first 2 years, I was suggesting to our doctor the medication she should be on, and they were simply issuing the prescriptions.
Yeah, which is crazy. Which is why you need a proper neurologist to oversee.
But neurologists are rarer than a hen's teeth that understand Parkinson's.
Yes.
We did try to contact a lot of neurologists, and I asked their secretary for a brief CV of their understanding and what their speciality is. And it was I was shocked how evasive some of them were and how, when it did come out and I looked them up, they were specialists in other areas, sleep deprivation and eating disorders.
Yeah.
But they all wanted to jump on the PD bandwagon. So I think as a newbie, you have to be really careful.
So you need to pester people to get what you want. Mm. And you also somehow have to be relatively well informed to understand whether somebody can help you or not. I do think that Parkinson's UK, they have a helpline, and I do think they are very thoughtful and helpful in making you understand what you need.
So
yeah, I think they probably are. But I think, like all people, you look at these organizations and think, are they really going to be able to help me? Do I, you know, do I really want to waste their time? Shouldn't this be something that I'm dealing with and capable of?
Well, yes, except that it is such a complicated disease, and we do have a local representative, a local advisor via Parkinson's UK, and they actually know loads. So it is good to get in touch with Parkinson's UK. Certainly when I got in touch with them, they couldn't have been sweeter, more understanding, which is helpful when you've had a blank wall from just your GP.
You mentioned one of my other pet hates, disease.
Yes, tell me. I think we agree, and I'm not quite sure how I can eliminate it from my vocabulary. It's so deeply embedded.
I still do the same, but I think this suffix on Parkinson's is very unhelpful. It is a stigma. And I think it's very confusing, because if you have a viral disease like Ebola, rabies, or a communicable disease such as flu, hepatitis, measles, then it's understandable. It is a disease. Why do we attach it to Parkinson's when things like arthritis, dementia, diabetes, epilepsy, multiple sclerosis, hypertension, shingles are all diseases, but we do not add the suffix disease to it? Why do we do it to Parkinson's?
I don't know, but I think you and I should start a project that we will just eliminate it from our vocabulary. And I also...
It hurts the person. They think, I've got a disease. I think apart from having the shock of being told Parkinson's, to then hear that it's a disease.
The word Parkinson's is quite scary enough without adding any more trauma to it.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Now, I think you have an opinion on the word carer as well. I'm interested for you to share.
Yeah, I hate the word carer because Mary Frances, my wife, we're married. And when you marry somebody, and I do include a partner in that, when you have a permanent relationship with a partner, you make a promise to each other, whether it's through a formal wedding or through a social interaction in your personal lives, to care for somebody. For better or for worse, or the words that each religion may take, until death do you part. So it's indicative within that promise you make that you are going to care for somebody. If you attach, in my opinion, if you attach the word carer to somebody, it already places them in a different category, a different position from that of your husband or wife, and they suddenly feel now that there is this distinction between you and them, because you're not their husband or their wife or their partner, you're now their carer.
Yeah.
And I think those are my pet hates. But unfortunately, we have to use it because there are no other terms. When you talk to the doctor and the doctor said to me, are you a registered carer? Not our local GP, but I think it was Dr. Roche. And I said, well, I went onto their website and I phoned the surgery, and they said they didn't know what I was talking about. They said they don't have such a thing.
Well, they didn't understand your question, which is crazy because they ought to have understood it. Yeah, yeah. Has your relationship changed because, although you remain the husband, you are obviously doing a lot more mental and physical work towards your relationship than you did, or it's changed the way you?
No, I don't think the relationship has changed, because if you're in a proper relationship, that relationship continues irrespective of whether the other one has a problem or a disability or whatever. Small minor things change. I mean, when I was young, maybe a bit risque saying this, but I had to learn how to swiftly and with panache remove a bra.
I
spend my mornings fitting one
doing one up.
Not me, but...
So
things do change in life a little bit.
That's wonderful.
You'll probably want to edit that out. I don't
know. No, I'm keeping that in for sure. But it's so true.
But on a day-to-day basis, I think it changes because you end up having to deal with everything. And whilst you obviously keep your wife, partner informed, it's only when really they show an interest in taking that subject further, because they tend to be less interested in as I think Parkinson's progresses, they sort of retract a little bit, and
yeah.
You have to fully take command. For example, one of my hobbies was flying as a licensed pilot, and we used to fly all over the world, and we had a great time. And occasionally, I would fly with another qualified pilot, and if we were doing a quite complicated flight, it was a great relief to have another pilot there, to be two pilots instead of single pilot. And I always felt that when there were two pilots, the workload was not 50%, but it reduced to 25%. And it was really quite simple, a two-pilot operation. And I suddenly found with it being in this situation with Parkinson's is that situation reverses. And all of a sudden, what seemed a 25% role between you, not 50%, now to me has become 100%. And I feel the effective fourfold increase in having to deal with the pressures and the demands of just life with somebody who has to rely upon you to do everything.
I completely empathise with that, because people with Parkinson's get very fatigued, and as it goes on, some people get a bit confused, and therefore it's not easy as someone in your position. It's not easy to have a proper conversation, because sometimes they can't follow it easily.
Or they forget.
Or they forget they had it.
2 hours later, they'll ask the question again, and you say, yes. And then sometimes you get a bit frustrated, and you say, we discussed this a few hours ago, and then you have to suddenly bite your tongue because...
Yeah, because they're not well.
Yeah.
Because they're not well. Enormous amount of patience is required. It is hard. How do you refill yourself? Because it sounds as if, with the best will in the world, Marie-France can't always give you the nurturing that we expect and need from a joint partnership. So
it's a constant learning curve. Life, as you go along, teaches you and you become more experienced. I was widowed previously, about 35 years ago. My late wife had cancer, and we had a pretty rough time for about 5 years, the last of which was quite bad. So one has to... I'd already become an expert, if you like, in this situation. So this situation wasn't new to me. No matter how hard you try, you aren't going to get things right because of just your personal emotions. You could be tired, you could be irritable, you've got a problem you've got to deal with, and they are asking for your attention, and you sometimes can bite, and then you feel terrible because you shouldn't have bit.
Well, but it's natural.
So it's a very difficult period during this process, and obviously with Parkinson's, it goes on for years and years, as do other problems in life. It's not easy.
No.
Anyone.
What have you learnt about yourself during these past few years that you've learnt and then thought, oh, well, I could do it differently, or
I think there's lots.
But that's so nice to hear that you're aware that you could have done it better, because so many people are not aware. So
no, yeah. And I think one of the things I did learn is that you have to maintain your own, and independence is not the right word, but yeah, you have to maintain your own interest in life, because if you don't maintain your own interest, you can become very restricted. And I found at one point a couple of years ago with Marie France that she didn't like me going out, and I do quite a bit of voluntary work with different things. And when I came back, she was very ill, upset, and she hated me leaving. And it would have been very easy to get into that situation where I didn't go out and I didn't have any external interests. And also, she didn't want to meet friends or to go to, and she loved going to art galleries and museums and so forth. And all of a sudden that all stopped. And I had to push her. So I learned that I had to now push her to do all the things that she liked to do, and also have my own interests and have my own challenges in life, and also to look after myself. Because if I became down or difficult, then it would again start the spiral circle between us. It's so many parameters and so many complexes.
Well, I think everything you say is absolutely true. And it's always that thing of when you're on the airplane, they say, if the masks come down, please put yours on first and then do your child's. And that's exactly the premise, that if you're not well, how on earth can you help anyone else? And I've said this a million times. How is everything at the moment? Have you got something you're both looking forward to doing?
Prior to this, we were living all over the world. And now that we're graduates, we've now come back to the UK and living in the UK. But we still travel a little bit, although that's becoming difficult. We're going to France at Christmas, and we're going to spend time in France. But the getting to France is something I dread, absolutely dread. You get to the airport by taxi, because we can't go on public transport or trains. And then when they drop you off at the drop-off point, you've then got to get the drop-off point, queue for check-in, and then having checked in, you can then go to assistance and get the wheelchair. So that first part is very difficult, and by then they are totally exhausted. Or if you take your rolly with you, which my French uses, you've then got to try and fold that up, pack it, take it to the oversize, and then the complications are just enormous. And then when you get there, the other end, quite often the pickup on a wheelchair is not arranged. I've had it where one night in Amsterdam, I had to carry Marie France off the aeroplane, because eventually they said they were going to take the plane and tow it away to the parking area, and nobody came. Traveling with somebody who is disabled is really a nightmare.
Yeah, it's all stressful. And it's so sad that it's stressful, because one does want to do fun things. You do want to have fun in your life.
But the airlines really haven't established anything cohesive, properly thought out for disabled people. And maybe there's something Parkinson's UK could take up with.
They've got a lot to take up. How long are you going to be in France? Because we're approaching Christmas. How long will you be there?
Well, we're not coming back until the 1st of Feb.
Fabulous.
Because we'd always spend the British UK winter in South Africa. So,
so sensible.
But that's finished now.
Right. Well, I take it you're going to the south of France then.
It's southwest, the D'Artagnan region.
Beautiful.
It's quiet, it's peaceful.
That's so lovely. Nigel, I want to thank you again so very much. I feel that what you've said, almost everyone is going to completely relate to, and you've expressed yourself.
Thank you.
Beautifully. Thank you very, very much.
I think just as a final, it's important that you do look after yourself, because and this gets overlooked. If anything happens to the carer, that horrible
word. Yeah, that word.
The other person all of a sudden is going to be totally lost. They're going to be alone, adrift in an ocean with hungry sharks. Mm. And maybe actually not even a life raft.
Yes, 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 yes. Well used. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. So basically, your tips are you've got to sort out the consultant who can really help you, and you have to find some information either from your GP if they're helpful. Most of them, I agree, don't really have the information. Parkinson's UK can certainly help to an extent. And to keep your individual interests going, I agree there as well, because if you are only doing this looking after, that actually mentally is going to not be at all healthy. So you do have to find a way where your partner is looked after or is able to stay by themselves, or more importantly, if you can persuade them to continue with their interests, then everybody's got something to talk about, haven't they? It's so much better to have a good conversation. And by having your own interests, that's one way of looking after yourself, because if you're not well, then your partner is certainly not going to be in the best way. So I totally agree. And thank you very, very much. Have a wonderful time. Bye.
My second PA is a lady who wanted to remain anonymous, but still kindly agreed to speak to me. I refer to her as Kate. Kate has been with her husband for many years now, and in the past year, there has been a need for much more help and support for Kate to look after her husband. This is how she is experiencing life at the moment.
We actually were living in Africa at the time, and he had a funny quiver in his arm and thought, okay, I better go and get this seen too. Left me in Africa, we were living in Zambia. Went to the doctor, had an MRI, flew back out to Zambia, told me, oh, he said, I've got Parkinson's. And I said, don't worry, darling, we'll deal with it.
And how easy has it been to deal with it?
Well, it was fine up until so that was 2015. And actually, up until this year, or the last let's say 18 months, there's been kind of a breeze. What comes to my mind now is I remember always saying to myself, carer? I'll always be the carer. Mm. Because, you know, that was always, you know, my love or whatever. Oh. I don't want any carers in the house. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
That was always what I've always thought up until this year,
mm-hmm.
when actually caring, I now understand, is a very, very different ball game, a very tough, hard job. And so therefore, we now have a carer that comes in, a Nick, he's amazing. Me and him, we share the load, because actually it's impossible for one person to do it full time.
It is interesting, isn't it? Just because you say caring isn't my thing, of course you do more than enough. However, it doesn't stop the loving, does it?
No.
Interesting how different words mean different things.
So caring, as in I'm sort of saying the care.
Yes,
as in the job care.
Yes.
You know, that is hard, yes. Because that is all about, you know, whoever the patient would be.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, 24/7. So my life now is I am two people. I don't have really my own life anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I have snippets and I have sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I have sleep because Nick does the nights.
Good.
I have sleep. But in the day, I don't really have life that she had, because, you know, he needs 24-hour care now.
Has he been able to share with you how he feels?
I think that there is relief for him that there's somebody else helping out.
Right.
And also that he can really boss that person around because we're paying for it. It's complicated and it's complex, I think. I think he feels relieved, but he always wants me, you know? He always wants me. We don't have kids, but I think, well, this must be very near to how a mother would be and her child, because there's a lot of guilt, you know? Also, sometimes maybe there's, on my part of wife now, there is possibly maybe a bit of jealousy, maybe not all the time, but just like, so why do you like his food better than mine? You know, things like that. I think he doesn't really understand still why he has got a carer. Mm. He doesn't quite still understand why life has changed to the fact that somebody lives in our house now and, you know, suddenly Nick appears and he, you know, and I'm sort of less on call, but we're getting used to it. And I'm very, very, very grateful that we can do this and that we have got him.
Yes.
Because,
so, yeah. Well, yeah.
There's no way I could do it 24 hours now.
How have you found help? I know that you sometimes go to the carers group, and I know that you're a big organizer within.
Well, yeah, I've been a bit slack recently because it's just been chaotic here. But yes, I am. I mean, I hope, you know, I am part of the carers group and feel that it's quite a strong, that's a strong part of my life within living with Parkinson's, that group.
Do you gain any strength from going to the Parkinson's group?
Yes, definitely. I think it's got its pros and cons. I think sometimes it gets really, you know, it gets quite depressing. Before, when things were not like how it is now, it was great. But now I'm in that depressing part. And so it's quite difficult for me to go to it, even though I am one of the five that are running it.
Yeah.
I think if I had known what I'm in now, I probably wouldn't have signed up.
When you do find the small amount of time to be you, what is it you do with that time? And how much strength or renewal of strength does that give you?
Well, to be honest, what I do is I sleep, because we have a night carer. So I just sleep. I go to bed at the, you know, in the top of the house, and I sleep, and I get a really good night's sleep. I sleep. And then he works 5 nights and a day. And that other day I go and look after my mum.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate to say the least.
Yes. So I'm pretty exhausted, Vivian. I mean, I'm tired. I'm tired. Even though we have got Nick, who's working with us.
A privilege and a thank goodness for that. Yeah, it doesn't make everything completely smooth.
No.
So tell me, what help have you had from anybody official? Would you recommend your consultant? Is there something you think, actually, it was great that we had that? Or is there something, actually, it was bad when that happened, and if I knew then what I know now, I would do it differently, and therefore it would be some advice to somebody who's not yet in your position?
I mean, I do think that carers are so important. I think it's really hard to find carers. I think, I mean, even though we've got Nick, who came from, I don't know where, from God.
Yeah.
Really, I don't know how even he appeared, because he came in the summer. Everything was extremely chaotic, and suddenly I opened the door. I actually wasn't living in this house at the time. I opened the door. I was coming daily, and suddenly this person opened the door. He was he's lovely, wearing my red slippers, a penny and a mop in his hand. And I was like, what are you doing? And I was like, this is not going to work out, you know, mopping the floor of, well, our kitchen. And anyway, he just turned up via another carer. So he is with us. And I keep saying, don't you leave. And if you are going to leave, you've got to give me, you know, a lot of notice.
6 months' notice, yes.
Yeah, at least. Yes. But I am, I'm constantly interviewing people all the time, actually. Nobody seems right. It's very difficult to find the fit. You don't even, you even know the fit until the fit happens. Because Nick, if I interviewed him, I would have said no. But he is so right. And I'm just going upstairs. So I don't know how to round things off. Obviously, getting a carer and finding the right one is desperately important for the patient as well as you. And I know that having someone live in, it's not easy, but they can come to the house, they can come and go. So that's an important tip, that once you get to a certain stage, you know that you need some extra help.
And without a doubt.
Yeah. You've got to financially find your way through somehow to get some help. Is there anything else that you can think of that might help a new carer?
You have to go day by day or sort of month by month with it. I honestly never thought it would be, I never, ever, ever thought that it would be like this. Mm. I think I was very naive in what I thought Parkinson's would be. I really had no idea that it was going to be so tough, because it's not just sort of the physical, it's the mental side as well. And that's the hardest, actually, is the mental side rather than the physical. I would say to anyone, you muddle through. I mean, in our situation, we're lucky because there are resources. God knows how anyone is without resources to pay for a carer. I mean, it's just me and him. We don't have kids. I mean, there are families that have kids, so they can muck in.
So the most important thing is to take it day by day. And in any case, everyone has it affect them in a different way at a different speed. So you can't know how it's going to be next month or next year. And the most important thing, it sounds to me, and certainly in my experience as well, is you've just got to, as you said, day by day, month by month. And when you get to the next stage, realize it and then find out how best to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, now when it comes to carers, I'm constantly looking for them, you know, so that's something that I've learned. So now I know that we need a carer and we'll probably need more care, you know, like at some point. So I am constantly on the lookout for people who, which is what something that I would never have thought of. So now that's something that I'm always doing. Okay, I'll interview you. Yeah, maybe we might need you in the future or whatever. And that's the difference. It's a full-time job, Vivian.
I'm immensely grateful to both these PAs. They were open and honest with me so that they could share their experiences with you. And I have no doubt that a huge number of you PAs can relate to a lot that was said. To all PAs out there, you're doing a grand job of supporting your partners or maybe parents or even children. It's not always possible for the person who has Parkinson's to understand what you are going through. But us other PAs certainly do. And let's salute each other in our efforts to make life smoother for our loved ones.
Please note that unless otherwise stated, the people speaking in this podcast are not experts. They are describing their personal experience of Parkinson's disease and ways they have personally found helpful in dealing with it. You must consult your own medical advisors before acting on any suggestions made in this podcast. This applies to experts as well as non-experts. Nothing in this podcast is to be treated as advice, and no liability whatsoever is accepted by the makers or participants for any steps taken in reliance on any part of its contents.